Is there a new disc?
Yeah, okay. New disc. I'm sitting here with Zenya, and this is the 8th broadcast of Radio Free Erica. It's 1:02 p.m. on Tuesday, the 31st of August. And here we are, only 2 minutes late. So what was playing, if you were listening before we started our live broadcast, was a few of the tracks from the poems Not Fit for the White House that was presented at Lincoln Center on February 17th, 2003. So Zenya is going to be doing the Wednesday broadcast of this week with Misha Sklar and one other person that she'll announce. Just wanted to talk a little bit about today and tomorrow, and then ask Zenya to talk about what's going to happen on Wednesday. Today, we'll be checking in with Wade on his commute. I'll be checking in with Shava Simon Alexander to talk to her about the youth. Youth activities in relation to the Republican National Convention and the elections. Chavez just recently graduated from undergraduate school, and she has some things to say about her own activities and her peers. And then we'll be checking in with Mary Adams again at her dress shop on the Lower East Side to hear what she's been hearing in the news and what she's been seeing on her commute, what she's been thinking about. And then lastly, we'll be checking in with Barbara Weisberger, one of the artists from the Watch What We Say exhibition. She's based now in Pittsburgh. She moves between New York, Montana, and Pittsburgh, and she's going to talk about her work and the piece that's in the exhibition. Tomorrow, we'll be broadcasting again from Schroeder Romero Gallery. I'll be calling into Maki in Japan to hear an outsider's perspective in, and also to just hear what the weather is there, what's growing, what the seasons are feeling like in Tokyo. We'll check in again with Wade. We'll talk with Carrie Moyer from the Watch What We Say exhibition about her painting in the exhibition and her work in general. Then we'll also be talking to Ricardo Dominguez about the electronic sit-in that you can access via the Watch What We Say website, and projects that he's involved with the Electronic Disturbance Theater. And then Wednesday, Zenya.
Oh, and Wednesday we'll be calling Moscow, St. Petersburg, to get the, you know, our friends looking onto what is happening here, and I guess, you know, what's happening in general. And then maybe we'll call our friend at DCTV, and he usually knows a lot about what's happening with the bikers in New York and different activities that's happening with the video work. And we'll read something in Russian and play something in Russian that has connection to this project.
Great.
So, yeah.
And so you'll be broadcasting a little bit both in English and Russian.
Yeah. We'll definitely explain what is it that we're doing right now.
Okay. And speaking of the biker activities, I keep meaning to ask if you guys were part of the bike, the 5,000 bikers, not the arrest specifically, but...
Well, no, the only like big city bike activity that we participated in was the Warriors Race, which was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, other than that, I don't really... No, we didn't.
Right. Okay, so what else? What else is, like, what do you feel like your friends are talking about? Are they not talking about what's going on right now, or are you talking about, I mean, of course you're talking about what's going on, but
yeah,
specifically meaning the conventions, or what sort of things
I don't know, I just, yeah, definitely we are talking about it, and we just, well, you know, we criticize a lot, like, what's happening, but we also, like, it feels like we're kind of, we still, I don't want to say we feel like outsiders, but it just, there's a lot of controversial things that it seems like. For example, like the march, it doesn't feel completely appropriate for me, let's say, I don't know, you know, kind of sharing. Okay, it's hard to explain, kind of, but it seems like I can't, there are certain things, there are a lot of things, let's say, that I don't share, like the beliefs that I don't share with a lot of people, and it makes it difficult for myself and like a lot of my friends to become part of, just because we don't share the same, you know, sometimes like we tend to be kind of too idealistic about things, so that means, you know, a lot of things just go out off our list and we're just not in them. Like, let's say the march was one of them, unfortunately, but it's just I can't really march together with, you know, posters saying, you know, let Carrie win, because I don't necessarily believe that Carrie winning would actually, you know, change what I'm hoping for to be changed. So that's like one of the things. And so it makes it difficult to kind of enter these things and be fully active in them, which is kind of sad, but then it's okay, I guess. It just means that we need like different ways of expressing ourselves and just do it ourselves, and you know, hoping that people are gonna join us and just.
And so, do you feel like there's motivation to do those sorts of things, like to?
Well, yeah, definitely, because I mean, I know that like. For example, like reading Russian newspapers, is Russian community is very not into anything like political, or they just like Russian community, if you take Brighton Beach or like broader Russian community, it seems to me anyway, is doesn't really want to get involved in any protests, or just like Russian media is maybe not a best way to judge Russian community in general, because there are a lot of like artists, like Russian artists or like people who come from former Soviet Union who live in New York and kind of active, but it just like right here in Brooklyn it just feels, and that's where like a lot of Russians live, it just feels very dead and quiet, and like people not generally very much concerned with like changing things necessarily. I mean, they might be concerned, but they're not really doing anything. Like the main concern is the family, and it just doesn't really go past kind of like, I don't know, my own household, my own apartment, my own house. And that, I don't know, it's kind of hard to get a response from like a Russian community, and like it's just like motivate them to support something that doesn't have practical applications, I guess. I don't know. So, like, support arts, or, for example. So, I don't know. Taking that into consideration, and taking into consideration what's going on in the city right now, I'm just like, I find myself being like in between this kind of very pessimist approach and very the vibe of the city, and just kind of trying to make an intelligent decision, basically, like, what am I supposed to do in this situation? Like, what is my place, basically? So,
yeah, it's complicated. I mean, I think that there are, I mean, I feel like, speaking of idealistic now, I feel like I'm going to be, like, idealistic, but I think that there were a lot of people at the march, actually, that, like, would agree with that sentiment, that weren't there in support of Carrie necessarily, but they were in support of the idea of peace, I guess.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, in support of the idea of not Bush, which, you know, at this point, like, the alternative that we're given is Kerry in a, you know, if we play by the rules kind of way, but but then I think there are many, many people there who are looking beyond that. I mean, I would, the majority of people that I know were that were there would be in total agreement with what you're saying. It's interesting. I mean, and it's exciting to think about, though, like, so then what, like you say, it's some other way in having people join you. Like, are you interested in having, like, the Russian community join you, or just people, period? Like, doing something alternative and having anybody who agrees with you join you, or?
I would definitely wish there was more, like, kind of embracing tendency from, like, Russian community to, like, to kind of, I don't know, just think a little bit more outside of certain box of a Russian community, and just a little bit more about, like, just opening up the minds a little bit more. I mean, I'm not, I don't want to say that Russian community is this, like, close-minded kind of community, but it's just, it just feels a little bit, in general, just feels like, I'm going to talk about the, you know, the Brooklyn, like, the Brooklyn Brighton Beach type of thing, and it's, like, just seems that people are mostly preoccupied with individual, you know, well-being, and just a lot of it is very discouraging, just because it's there are not a lot of people who kind of gonna go out of their ways to kind of participate in something or, like, support something, and that's kind of discouraging.
Well, and people, like, people your age, what, how are you seeing them? Like, are they staying in these communities in generally, or are they moving to the Lower East Side or to Montana to go to school? Like, what what are people, like, your age and younger, like, teenagers, are they?
Well, we choose to stay here, like, just because I find, like, Brooklyn, well, that's where I lived, you know, ever since I came to America, and it just seems like I really enjoy, you know, going to the newsstand and seeing all the, like, Polish newspapers, Russian, you know, Spanish, Chinese, like, Arab, Israeli newspapers all together, and, like, really having all these people, like, talking and communicating with each other on a, like, on a basic human level, not connected by maybe business so much, but just by the, you know, their, the place where they live, and just, you know, being able to communicate on that basic human level is very important. And I, despite, like, all the pessimism of, like, maybe Russian community or whatever, it's there are still great things that you can see around the neighborhood a lot, and just, it's, I mean, I guess it's exciting. As opposed to living in Manhattan, maybe, where everything would be more, like, cosmopolitan, where, you know, it's like being a student at NYU made me feel like that, kind of coming from this Brooklyn to the city, studying, you know, the master's degree program, where everybody kind of comes from different backgrounds, but then everybody kind of abandons them for this kind of uniform setting that they're in right now, and just communicating on the cosmopolitan level rather than on really sharing their backgrounds, if that's clear. I don't know. So, yeah, that's why I choose to stay, to live in Brooklyn, just because I don't want to abandon that completely, and I want to share, you know, different, you know, cultural or language backgrounds on the basic human level, rather than just, you know, share it on a more abstract, like, general level with people. That's how I feel it happens in the city anyway, where,
like, more on a level of, like, the style of culture, like, that's kind of what,
Yeah, where it tends to be more like stereotypical, I guess. Because if you witness people like going about their ways in their natural habitat, so to speak, it's like when they go doing their shopping in their stores, or they buy their newspapers, or they buy their books, it's different from where they buy those books translated in English, for example, or they go to see these movies in, you know, Cinema East or something, or Angelica. It's kind of different to see them do that here and like be together with their families than being, you know, in the city and just kind of be part of the same crowd, but not having the family and the background kind of thing.
Right.
So.
Well, I think that's interesting in relation to also like that you just were very critical of the community, but that you're living within it, so it's not like that's coming from, you know, your Stanton Street apartment or whatever. It's like it's you're living within it. But do you see other people your age like choosing to do the same sort of thing, or do you think like in general, like teenagers, Russian teenagers that have grown up in the U.S. are wanting to get out of these intense, you know, communities of other Russian people and go to places like Manhattan or or California or whatever?
I mean, a lot of people I know, the Russian people especially, like, you know, people who are involved with arts or whatever, or like technology or, you know, new media, they, a lot of them want to live in the city and do live in the city, and it is very comfortable, I guess. But just, I mean, and I totally don't, I don't really, you know, think that it's bad, or it's comfortable, but it's just, I personally don't feel like I need that type of comfort. Like, I don't really, like, you know, I don't have a desperate need to be close to things in the city, or, you know, I don't mind taking a 40-minute, you know, subway commute and be there on my own choice instead of being there, like, all the time and have no choice of, like, not being in the city. Or so, but, yeah, I would say that a lot of, like, Russian young people that are especially involved with the arts or whatever, they would prefer to live in the city, in Manhattan, just because it's in right in the middle of where things are happening.
And does it seem like many people want to leave even further than that, like to other places in the U.S. or like Europe or?
The Europe is very tempting for people, and I know some people who, actually know some people who went back to live in Moscow, but Europe seems very tempting for people, but I think like Russian people especially, they just it's not as convenient to live in Europe as it is for them right now, right here. So it's tempting in the sense that there's this myth about Europe being more into arts or more, I don't know, supportive of non-materialistic values. But I just think I guess it's a myth for a big part. And, you know, there's one thing of, like, wanting to escape somewhere where you, like, in right now, and there's another thing of, like, having another immigration to some place that you know, that you don't really know about that much anyway. So I know a lot of people who would want to live in Europe for like some time, but definitely not, you know, just go to live there forever just for the sake of experience. And I would probably be one of them if I wasn't like that much connected to like Brooklyn, I guess. I just, for me personally, like living in Europe is not an option right now, just because I don't particularly think that it's better there. I mean, I don't see why it should be better to live over there than over here.
Right.
So, yeah.
I feel like I'm a person who always is like, oh, it's better over there, you know? And it's so great to hear you talk practically about, like, Brooklyn's great, it's better here, it's just as good here.
We have family here, so it's like, you know, I would need to consider it twice before, like, leaving them. I'm not really, like, in the situation of, like, just, okay, I'm going, you know, and them being completely, like, fine with that. I would have to think twice about it before I really do that. So for me, it's not that easy, maybe. But I also, like, really think, you know, oh, Europe, this amazing place where everything is, like, the arts are supported and everything. But I wouldn't think so, actually. I mean, it should be, I mean, if anything, it probably would be as hard for a person like me to adjust there as it is here. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be much easier there. I don't see why it would be easier.
Right.
So there is no point of, like, you know, seeking a better place if you're in a relatively nice position right now. So.
Right. Well, yeah, and there's, I guess you're the one who's always telling me too that you keep hearing, like, technology is so much more supported, or in the art world there. And so, like, there's all these things that we hear, you know, third hand that makes it sound a little bit more utopian. But then when you actually talk to people in these other places, like, of course, it's life and it's hard there too.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, the hardest thing about, I mean, the most kind of problematic thing about it is that, I'm a Russian person from former, you know, when I left Russia, it was USSR still, so it's, like, totally different as well, coming here. And then having that background, going to Europe, for me, would be, like, another immigration. I don't see why I would fit in. You know, and why it would take me less time to fit in there.
Right.
And I'm kind of like, I kind of just got comfortable here. So I'm just, you know, it's not like, you know, I wouldn't really just go somewhere right now where and start all over necessarily. You know, there is no reason to do it right now.
Right. Cool. We were wondering what we were going to talk about.
Yeah.
No, that was good. So, back on the subject of this week and the convention, like, do you and your friends have anything planned? Any other things planned? I know you rode your bike around the other night before it started to see sort of what was going on in the middle of the night or early in the morning. Do you have any other things planned or ideas?
Yeah, we wanted to do, like, some more night riding, because it seems like, I don't know, just it's fun to ride the city at night, and there are less people, but then there are somehow activities that are happening at night, which you would never, like, during the day, it's like things, you know, places are crowded, and there's so much information coming from different places. At night, it's more like about, like, concentrating on things, and it was very interesting to see, you know, the Madison Square Garden preparation for the convention, and just kind of like people. We saw this guy who was coming out of the bar with his girlfriend, and I guess they were a little bit drunk, and he was like very stylish, kind of seeing the checkpoint, this huge checkpoint for the convention vehicles. So they were searching this, like, truck with, you know, the towels for the hotels, I guess, where people stay, with a dog and like, you know, just, like, this metal detectors. And this guy and this girl just came around to the police officers and started asking them, you know, why would they search, you know. He was basically saying that if he would be attacking, he would choose a place that they least expect to attack, and just kind of trying to be, I guess, smart about it. And, you know, what do the police officers can't really tell him much. You know, it's like, you know, they're not going to have a conversation with him anyway. So that was kind of funny. But then there were some people who, it seemed like some people really just, like, glued to the whole spectacle of like the dogs searching and ever just like standing there for, you know, hours just watching what they do. And it was kind of weird. And just like driving through the city and seeing like, you know, what's happening at the, you know, municipal, the city hall, by the city hall, and then further to the Madison Square Garden, like policemen having cigars and just hanging out, and like really just feels like, I don't know, they're, you know, the policemen, they just the most interesting groups there, just because they're, you know, acting out, and they feel like they're, you know, just in power or whatever, just makes them such a dynamic, very dynamic groups. And just like, although I really like, I'm petrified of like really, you know, being involved with the police and just like having a conversation with them, but still, it's just like observing them was really interesting. And,
yeah, I was actually kind of surprised yesterday when we saw two police at Coney Island. You know, I don't know why. I mean, not that every single cop in the boroughs is going to be in Manhattan, but
right.
I was just like, oh, look, they're here too.
Well, yeah.
Because it seems like they're so stretched, like, to be filling up the island. Like, I would...
Yeah, I don't know where they... I don't know where they're coming from, or
yeah.
How they managed to be in so many places at
yeah.
once. So many of the... We even saw, like, we drove by... It was already, like, 2:30 in the morning, and we were coming back to Brooklyn, and we were driving by the Prospect Park. There was one police car right there. Nobody in the park, but there was a police car with their lights on, sitting in the bushes there, listening to the crickets, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, and you know, it seemed like they were awake and, you know,
right.
just like watching out in case something happened. It was funny.
Huh. Wow. Okay, well, I should probably phone Wade. He's going to be taking his cigarette break so he can take my phone call. I can give you this so you can listen in also if you'd like.
Okay. Thanks.
I think, yeah. So we're calling Wade Nasanovich at his day job. He's a Brooklyn-based writer, and he has a day job at FIT in the financial aid office. So we're going to give him a call.
Because
it's the first time I'm on time. Wade?
Erica.
Hey, Wade, how you doing?
I just dropped my phone, sorry. Once I dropped my phone, it hit the rim of the toilet, and it just shut off.
So just now?
What was that?
Just now?
No, like about a week and a half ago.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was going in the toilet, and then it hit the rim, and then it fell to the floor, and then for whatever reason, that turned it off. The impact turned it off.
The impact of the toilet?
Yeah, it's not very far, too, is it? The toilet is perhaps foot and a half from my pocket? The toilet rim.
Yeah, well, I just think you're lucky it didn't go in the toilet, I guess.
I know. I was counting my blessings.
Yeah, Mark has washed his cell phone twice. I don't know if that's something I should announce over the radio. But,
Really?
Yeah,
like it was in his pant pocket?
Yeah, and it went through the dryer once even, too, I think, and it still works.
Wow.
It's kind of unbelievable.
Really? What brand of cell phone now is that? Maybe you like to do a...
I don't know, a little blurb. I don't know. It maybe is a Verizon, like just a Verizon, like a, I don't know, well, this is a brand that was mine. I don't know what it is.
So it's like a free phone?
I don't know, Wade, I don't know. But
but it's Verizon. It was through Verizon.
Uh-huh.
If we're going to give plugs. So, how are you?
How many times you just said Verizon and then 3.5 minutes?
Did I say Verizon? I don't really remember saying Verizon, but I guess I must have said Verizon.
Yeah, well, you did.
So, Zin is here with me. You can't hear her, but if she has something that she needs to tell you, I'll translate.
Okay, who's here?
Zinya. She met your wife and baby yesterday at Coney Island.
Oh, yeah.
She and her partner are going to be doing the broadcast on Thursday, and so she's here today talking and checking out.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So, what was it like today?
You know, I didn't ride my bike.
How'd you get there?
When I woke up, I woke up like 5:15, and I woke up around like 3:15, and then when I woke up at 5:15, I actually thought that I was still just like...
Are you not talking in your phone?
There,
yeah, better.
Oh, okay. So I thought it was still 3:15 when I woke up at 5:15. Anyway, it was kind of like waking up on Monday and thinking it's Saturday. And it was raining, so I saw, you know, and it seemed like it didn't seem just like a shower. It seemed like it was going to be. Now, of course, it's sunny, and I could have come by bike, but anyway.
Wait, you're not talking in your phone again.
I'm not talking into it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you're sounding far away now.
Oh, how's that?
Better.
Okay, I'm totally holding my phone in it like a. Really unnatural way right now.
is there a reason for that?
I feel like I'm talking into one of those Nextel walkie-talkie phones. This is our product endorsement of Nextel.
Not Verizon.
Nextel. So anyway, I didn't ride my bike, and I've been paranoid that I'm going to slip under the wheels of a truck or something. So if it's going to rain really hard,
yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
So I came by train, and I got off at First Avenue and walked. First Avenue 14th, and I walked.
So I just have to interject here that I was also up at 5:15 this morning.
Uh-huh.
And do you do that regularly? You get up that early?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, sometimes I hit the alarm in my sleep, and all of a sudden it's 6:17 or something. But I mean, actually, I've been doing it. It takes a while to get used to it, but once I get into the groove, and then once I'm managing to go to bed before 11,
right,
then I can do it no problem.
Yeah, I'm very impressed. I just was a zombie.
Yeah, but you're just, you don't really get up that early, so I'm a zombie too when I first start doing it.
Yeah.
So, it just takes a while, because then I make sure I get into that rhythm of getting up earlier, or going to bed earlier.
Right.
And so it's no problem. I mean, it doesn't matter, you're just shifting your sleep. So, it's really not that impressive, because I'm going to bed early.
Well, it is impressive. Well, it's not really that early, but, I mean, it is impressive, because I feel like there's always more reasons to stay up late than there are reasons to get up early, you know? And I'm always, like, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to bed at 10 so I can get up really early, and then next thing I know, it's 12:45.
Yeah, I'm not, like, it's weird. I get anxiety if I think I'm going to lose sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't embark on it. I'm also tired, so I don't really feel like writing or doing anything. Like, my eyes burn, and...
Right.
I mean, I'm good at night, but... I just think I'm better in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I just get up and I feel so good and I make breakfast and then I have like my little Euro tray and I put my breakfast on my Euro tray and I bring it upstairs and I eat my breakfast while I'm kind of reading over stuff I've written.
Uh-huh.
But I save time. I was eating breakfast before I went up to write, but now I bring the breakfast up.
Oh yeah.
And then I eat later. So I want to eat early enough that I digest, because I don't like eating like a half hour before I ride my bike.
Yeah, no, that sounds...
Yeah, so I don't want to cramp up and...
Drown.
It's just like swimming.
So you walked from 14th Street in where?
First Avenue.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I did my, park circuit. So I did, I went up and I went across the north side of Stuyvesant Square, and then I crossed on the, I went around, Gramercy Park, and then I cut through Madison Square Park. And then I stopped at, Antique Cafe on, 26th and, 6th. And actually, I'd like to promote Antique Cafe. I think, they have the best, baked goods and the best customer service. I'm not one to be promoting customer service because I think it's a stupid concept to begin with, but they really have great customer service.
What do they do that's so great?
They're just so nice and sweet, and they're just really nice. I don't know what it is about them. They're just really, it's weird. They're very quiet. They're not like really outgoing servers or anything. They just serve you, and they're really calm, and you ask for something, they give it to you, and I don't know what it is. I really don't know what it is that makes them so nice. And the only reason I know is because they used to be at this one location on, 25th Street, I think it was, and someone basically took over the business. They called it something different, but it was really the same business, they were selling the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in there after they took over the business, and the replacement business totally sucks. They're so bad. They're just so bad. I don't know. It's weird. It's just these little things they do. Now the business that took over sucks. And so I think it's the reason the antique cafe people are so good is that they just, I don't know. It's just, there's just something like they wouldn't take something with chocolate icing and put it upside down in your hot coffee. And even if it is some kind of weird, unconscious desire to fuck up your pastry, it's still fucking up your pastry. I don't know. I'm ranting about past, unexplained past experiences.
But now I'm confused. I thought that now it's good, but now it's bad?
Well, now it's in a new location.
And it's good again.
It was always good. The customer service, the quality of pastries, traveled well to the new location.
Oh.
And then new owners took over the old location.
Okay, all right.
Kept the same menu.
Okay, all right. Now I understand. I'm sorry that I'm kind of slow on that.
That's all right.
I'm
explaining myself correctly. I was jumping around.
This is excellent. So we've got three very good pastry coffee joints from you now, from Greenwich Village through Chelsea up to Midtown, I guess?
Actually, I'll give you a fourth. I stopped at this place called Musette on 3rd Avenue and 20th, I think it is.
Uh-huh.
And they have the best, they call it the ham and cheese puff pastry. That is so good.
Drowning while you're riding your bike, but, okay.
Yeah, it's really good. And they have other really good stuff there. You can get a chicken for $5.75, a whole chicken, and they roast it, and it looks really good, and they put potatoes in there, too. It's served on a bed of potatoes. And it looks like the potatoes, they squeeze lime all over the chicken, and then the chicken juices drip down on the potatoes, and then those potatoes roast in the juices of the chicken,
uh-huh.
And they give you those potatoes with that chicken.
Sounds good for fall.
It's what they do, in Spain, they would do chickens like that.
Right.
I had the best chicken I've ever had in northern Spain. It was so good. I can remember eating it as if it were, an hour ago.
I wasn't eating meat when I went to Spain, and that was really hard.
You what?
I was not eating meat when I went to Spain, and that was really hard.
Yeah. Yeah, you can eat, eggs.
In Portugal.
Yeah, that's why you can eat seafood. Were you eating seafood or no?
No.
Oh, my God. So you were real. You were, for real, at least. Since you were, pseudo-vegetarian.
For a period of time.
Well, whatever. You had to visit the dark side.
Exactly.
To come back.
The bloody side. So you had a good pastry, you had good customer service. What did you observe on your walk?
What did I observe? I just thought a lot about how nice it is to walk by parks. I don't know if I really observed. I was probably daydreaming a lot. I missed out on a lot of things. Did you ever, like, drive down the road or walk down the street and you walk a few blocks and you've been so,
in
your thoughts?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, that kind of was happening to me this morning.
Are you thinking about what you're writing? Or what?
Sometimes I'm not really thinking right, but then I think about it, and then, you know, a lot of good and bad ideas, you know, come that way. But, yeah, a lot of times I write stuff down or I figure stuff out just by daydreaming. There's stuff like I would never ever be able to think about if I just sat there for, like, hours thinking about it. That's kind of amazing, I think, when that happens. But, yeah, I was just thinking about parks and, you know, I was thinking about, you know, when I used to walk to work in Spain, and getting up earlier, I was, like, getting up at 7, and all the bakeries were starting to, we lived in this neighborhood in Barcelona, that just, it used to be a village, and then when they built this area in the 19th century, like in the 19th century, they built this area called the Eixample, and the Eixample kind of occupied outer villages. So it's just, you know, Barcelona expanded so much, it just ended up occupying these villages. And where we lived was one of these, like, former, that once was a little village, like, in the 19th century. So there's tons of, like, little places everywhere. It feels like you're in a village, but, you know, there are tons of bakeries. So you're going on my way, I'd walk through this neighborhood, and you smell all the bread, and then I'd always hit this park, and I'd smell, like, just, you could smell, like, everything, like, just, like, the way everything, I don't even know what kind of plants they were. But you can smell that. And I love walking through the park, and then, like, the park kind of wafts out into the street. That was really nice. So that was happening this morning. Kind of, too, it was raining. I kind of wish it had been raining harder, so I could just walk through all the rain. Also, too, I was sweating so much that I kind of wished that it would rain, so people would think I was actually soaked by rain. Completely soaking my shirt with my own sweat.
Right.
And people can't deal with sweat at all. They really, they just can't deal with that at all. I get comments all the time and people asking me if I towel off, if I shower. So puritanical.
It's bizarre though that people ask you about it. I mean, like strangers? Or what does that mean?
Yeah, just people from work.
Right.
You know, so you shower? Yeah, you know, it's funny. I changed in the store where my, my boss, he uses this stall to defecate. And so it's weird. Sometimes I'm standing in that stall, I'm like, I'm naked, and I'm thinking, this is so weird, this is the same stall where I boss defecate.
Is there only one stall, or have you...
It's a handicap stall, it's
right.
A disabled stall.
Right.
So it has more room. But it's weird, it's weird feeling like you're in the bathroom that you use daily, and then, like, your buttocks is exposed. Just, you know, briefly. But, it's a weird feeling. You're afraid, like, someone's going to come in there. Like, I had this other fear that someone's going to come to the stall, see my clothes, and pull them out.
It sounds like a 12-year-old anxiety still.
Yeah, it is. That's never happened to me. It's something like skinny dipping.
Right.
You know, I'm afraid, like, you know, say I have to take off my glasses to go swimming, so I wouldn't be able to see anyone stealing all my shit. And then I come out, and it would all be gone, and I wouldn't be, you know.
Some bear will take your clothes away and make a nest out of them.
Yeah, but then I'm thinking, why am I so, you know, uptight about it anyway? I just have to walk around naked. Why would I care? Even though they're yelling at me or looking at me. It doesn't matter. It wouldn't matter, but, But that's never happened. One time I almost did lose my glasses. I went skinny dipping actually in Barcelona, and we came out, and I couldn't find my glasses. I didn't have any replacement glasses either. And someone found them buried in the sand.
Wow.
And it was so amazing. It was like, it was so happy. I was almost as happy then as when, I was on vacation with my parents as a little boy. We were in white sands, and we thought we lost the keys in the white sands.
Oh, my goodness.
And we had a total family meltdown, like my mother yelling at my father, and we're out in the, like, hot sun looking through the sand. And then it turned out that, like, my father just left them in the driver's side door. They've been hanging there the whole time.
Wow.
So I was so happy. It made me so happy. Also, too, like when we were, I was always had a fear that we were going to run out of gas when we were on vacation. So I'd always ask my father, like, we'd have a half a tank, and I'd make my father pull over and get gas.
Uh-huh.
And, like, sometimes it would happen, we were, like, driving, and I thought we were going to run out of gas, and I didn't know if we were going to be able to get a motel. And then we would, like, get a motel, And then my father would, like, go out and fill up the tank, and I'd be in the motel, and the car would be parked, and I'd have a full tank of gas. That made me feel really good, too.
Speaking of the car and your family, I tried to call Amy to hear how her drive home was last night. Did she make any comments?
Why? What happened?
Oh, the baby just was not happy for our little bit that we drove together, and so I was concerned for her for the rest of her drive.
She didn't mention that.
I think he must have fallen asleep then.
Yeah.
Because she was doing her best to get him to sleep when we separated, so.
Yeah, okay. No, he seemed like, I don't even know the way he seemed when I got home. I forget what happened when we got home. Oh, I just had the baby, and then we ate dinner. We had to tag team.
Right.
So, I forget what his deal is. And then we try to put him to bed early. We're trying to put him to bed earlier.
Right.
Like, no more, like, 11 o'clock, post-11 o'clock bedtime. I mean, I don't know. We don't really have a system.
Right.
So, we're kind of trying to be a little, well, not really, we're not trying to be so systematic, but, so then I saw him this morning, and I missed him. I was like, oh, I didn't get to hold him for a while, because usually I feed him.
Right.
So, I want to tell you that yesterday, after I hung up the phone, there was a protest that came up 8th Avenue.
Oh, yeah?
And, so it's too bad I missed that. It did prove to a small degree my theory that all the protests look the same. And I saw one group in there that was the same exact group that I was with part of the time on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
They were marching again. But I don't know, maybe they're professional protesters. But they were like this group that has a flamingo, not a pelican. They wear these like paper mache flamingos on their head.
Oh.
And they dance around.
Oh.
And they drum.
Huh.
So they were there.
Alright.
Again, so
And then, what else I saw.
Did you ever see that documentary? I didn't know of this guy before. This documentary is called War Photographer.
Oh, yeah, you know, Amy told me that you saw James Mockway.
Yeah.
And you recognized him from the documentary?
Uh-huh.
And
I was thinking, like,
cool.
James Mockway must be so psyched to be covering, like some really benign, subject. Like, he seemed really happy and relaxed, and then this guy came out. And actually what happened, I was watching him, I lost him because some guy came out, and he was laying in the middle of 8th Avenue and yelling something. And all the cops came, and then this woman told the cops, no, don't arrest him, and she said something to this cop, like, don't arrest him because, I don't know, he's crazy or something. And then he got up and he went to her, and then it was amazing when I lost James Mockway, like, I don't know how many photographers came out. I just feel like I've never seen anything like this. It was so many photographers. It was really like a feeding frenzy. It really was. It was like, this like, guys.
Wait, you're fading out.
I'm fading.
You there, better.
I'm back. So this guy was like, I don't know, like chum to the, sharks of, who was, you know, it was just like so many photographers and everyone's like lifting up their cameras and like videoing or snapping shots of this guy and he was like such a worthless subject. It was just a crazy guy. It was like they were so, like, they needed something.
Oh, they needed a crazy guy, yeah.
I know, it's just, so in James Mockway, I don't think James Mockway would lift his camera to take a picture of this guy, but everything was calm in like 2 seconds.
Right.
But I just thought it was amazing. Like, first of all, it didn't even seem like there was that much press around, and all of a sudden everyone just started running up to this man.
Right. I remember you said that you hadn't seen any press. I saw a picture of your coffins that you were marching near.
I know there were a lot.
Yeah.
I think there should have been more of that. I think these protests should be more somber. I don't think they should be so celebratory. I know, maybe I'm repeating myself again. I probably am repeating myself. I have a fear of repeating myself. That's one of my big fears.
Well, if it's a good idea, it's worth repeating.
I like speaking to you because you're very, approving and optimistic. Yeah, so I think you shouldn't be wearing flamingos on your head. You should be like, you should be wearing like black for all the dead and limbless and the limbless, people who are half vegetables because they were sent out back and they got, you know.
Well, I think I agree with you in this situation.
Yeah, everything just seems very, very abstract, and I think maybe it goes back to what we were talking about, how really we don't, it's like no one really talks about issues, you don't really hear about issues on so much in the press, or, you know, especially television, you definitely don't hear that. People would never, like I was thinking, you know, if we live in an ideal world, like, political organization would sponsor...
You faded again.
Oh, here, are you back?
Yeah.
I think I have to go back to the unnatural, awkward...
sorry about that.
That's okay. You know, like, can you imagine we live in a world where on TV, like, they would broadcast, like, in prime time, like, Social Security for Dummies, and everyone would tune in and, you know, bone up with Social Security or specialized medicine for dummies, and
right. You
could get your... It would never happen. You couldn't even get it in the paper. Like, you know, would a paper ever dedicate that much time? You know, because it's like... So it just seems like everything seems abstract. Like, you go to a protest, but, you know, it's like... I was thinking, like, how many people in that protest are going to vote? You know, I guess there's an election coming up, like, on September 14th, like, primary elections. Like, how many people are going to vote in those elections?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, I would say I'm sure a large majority of them will vote in November. But... it just seems like, I don't know, too abstract. That's why I think, like, I really don't know if anything is really going to change until, maybe it's like we're all too comfortable, you know?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think, like, there's the whole thing, the whole voting system, anyhow, is frustrating to people, and there are people who won't vote because they don't believe in that as the system, and, you know, that much bigger changes need to happen, and it's confusing, and I mean, I don't know how far we really are from some sort of major change, because definitely Kerry is not the major change.
Yeah, I don't know, I think, I don't know.
He's maybe some small comfort changes, but, yeah.
Yeah, but at least, think about what a nightmare it would be if, Bush were in for four more years, and I'm thinking, Bush really has a good lineup, like, people love Rudy Giuliani, people love John McCain, you know?
Some people hate them too. So yeah,
I know, but
I guess it's a color.
But like Rudy Giuliani is perfect for this, like, just perfect for like superficial promotion.
Oh yeah, and he's the expert on terror.
What was that?
He's the expert on terror as well because he was here, you know.
Just did his job.
The strong arm.
Yeah, I mean it was amazing how this guy like how 9/11 really transformed him into like this hero, this guy. I mean, I have to admit he did definitely perform better on September 11th and the days after than George W. Bush, who I was always expecting to like break down in tears or something.
Right.
But it really is amazing that this guy is like. Kind of launched him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact that people are talking about him, like, running for president.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So, who do you have lined up today, Erica?
Who do I have lined up today? Well, Vinny's here, and, you, and then I think one of, a student that just graduated, she said that she would like to talk a little bit about her disillusionment with her peer group. But maybe that's changing, I'm not sure. But just in terms of activity and awareness. And then Mary Adams. I haven't talked to her yet, so I don't have details. And then Barbara Weisberger, she's one of the artists in the exhibition. She's going to talk about
good.
Her piece. Yeah.
Yeah, I said, you know, I said maybe anyone who's like has like is politically conscious, like feels disillusionment with their peers, because there's always going to be a large majority of your peers. I mean, is she an NYU student?
Yeah, she was.
She was.
She was.
So, I mean, they're mostly rich kids who go to NYU now.
They're mostly rich kids, did you say?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it costs close to $50,000 a year to go to school at NYU.
So yeah, you have to be really poor or rich.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Zinnia says, yes, exactly. I mean, your mic is on, Zinnia, so people can hear your comments. He can't. But,
okay.
Yeah, Zinnia went, she was a graduate student in the ITP program. But, I mean, in terms of undergraduates, I think it's, you know, I mean, rich, whatever. Yes, people who come from comfortable homes.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe they just want to, like, they want to repeat the successes of their parents and you know.
Yeah, but then also, to be fair, I mean, the student that I'm going to speak to, I think that she did a lot of work to get, funds to fund her going to school there, and she does not come from, I mean, she comes from a comfortable home, but I think she comes from two teachers, a family of two school teachers. So, you know, I think she's more the exception than the rule, but.
Yeah, it's pathetic that people who are two teachers, you know, might have to not send their kid to the school that she's accepted to.
Right.
Because of money. Like, I have a friend who, former friend, or an old friend from high school who I don't keep in touch with. I'm trying to think what school he got into. I think he got into Princeton or something, and he couldn't go because his parents didn't have enough money.
Yeah.
Like, his dad was a professor, and his mom was a bus driver or something. And they couldn't afford it. So, I mean, he did fine. He's teaching at Harvard now. But
wow.
Still, it's still too bad that he, I guess, couldn't go to Princeton and be, like, study math there.
I know. Well, it's a whole other conversation, like, what it's going to be when our kids are ready to go to college, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's $50,000 now to go to NYU, think about what it'll be in 17
maybe,
years.
Maybe move to Argentina.
And they can raise steak.
Oh, that is great. I would love
you would love that.
I'm not castrating any bulls.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can bring your friend from Kansas in to do that.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll come down. I'll fly him down now and then to castrate some bulls.
Yeah, he can bring his lover. The two of them can get the bulls castrated.
Actually, you know, the meat, I remember Amy telling you a little bit about this meat that we ate in Argentina, but it is really, it is like the most exquisite flesh you would ever bite into. It's incredible. It's so good. I mean, I would fly down there, I'd pay $1,400 round trip, like, just to go down and just eat again, and, oh my God, and they know how to do meat, you know, you get these meat platters, and they have everything on there, like blood sausage and all this stuff. It's delicious. And even the kids who, are begging, like, they want good meat. Like, they won't accept, like they won't accept your kidneys that you have on your plate. They want, like, something better than that. Like, they even, you know, the urchins even have a taste for this. Yeah, it's incredible.
Little babe, you need to think about your high cholesterol.
I know, dude, I'm only 37, though. I don't have to think about it yet.
What do you mean? Don't you always
think about it later.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know, I have to. That's true, I have to. But, you know, there are medications on the market, and I'm sure there'll be better medications on the market when I'm 50. And there's going to be all kinds of medical interventions that they can do.
More better, more expensive. All right. I'm gonna stop haranguing you about your health.
I'm very healthy.
Okay. Yes, you are. You ride your bike to work almost every day.
Yeah.
And home.
I know. The problem is I like to eat like really high fat, high cholesterol foods. But I don't eat a huge amount of them. You know, and I never eat McDonald's.
Right.
Although I would love. Sometimes I just feel like Like, I wish there was a Kentucky Fried Chicken in my neighborhood, because there's sometimes I would just get a whole bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken and just, like, eat it and then, like, save it and then have cold Kentucky Fried Chicken the rest of the week. That's delicious. Although I'd probably be sick of it. I'd be sick of it in, like, 24 hours.
Yeah.
Do you like Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Not at all.
How do you like it? You don't like the breading or...?
I've never been the biggest fan of chicken, and I actually had a babysitter when I was a little kid who worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken, and she used to take us there, and I didn't like her, and I associate it with her, and
Really?
Yeah, I'm not such a big fan of chicken on the bone, and I don't know.
No, you're not a big fan of chicken on the bone. I mean, that's the purest form of chicken.
I know. I mean, I like a roast chicken, but not... I don't know. Chicken wings, I'm not interested in at all.
Because, you know, I roast a free range chicken with garlic and lime.
Yes.
And it's delicious.
It is
free
delicious.
Range is really good. And, you know, the thing is, the bone is, on the bone is so, like, as with all, flesh that you cook, having it on the bone is so much better.
I know, Wade. I appreciate and I learn from you, but you know, I'm still in training.
You're still in training on what?
With the bone, chicken on the bone.
Well, the thing is, one thing I don't know how to do, like, I was thinking of doing a soul food feast.
But let's talk reality here for a second. Kentucky Fried Chicken and a roast organic chicken are just, they're like totally different creatures.
Yeah, and Kentucky Fried Chicken, though, is like, yeah, it's the same pleasure of ordering General Tso's chicken.
Mm.
You know, General Tso's chicken is the most divine junk food out there.
Mm.
It's great. I love it. And I love rolling it in the rice, and then it has like a shell of rice around it, and then you eat it. So it's like triple layer. You have rice, then you have like mostly breading, and then you hit that very small nugget of chicken. I think chicken is a really, like, poor choice of meat. It's really generic. It's, like, kind of flavorless sometimes, you know. But I like it. I mean, I prefer pork or, you know, or lamb. I like lamb a lot.
Yeah, lamb's good. All right, okay. Vinny does not eat meat, and I feel like we've spent a good
time. Yeah, okay. I just say one thing about Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I'm probably going to get the story wrong. But Amy said her mom was married to or had a boyfriend who owned a Kentucky Fried Chicken chain store, and they one time, or they used to, or numerous times, they would do Thanksgiving in the basement of the Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh, wow.
Now, that's the story. Okay, so what were you going to say? I'm sorry, you want to go?
I probably should go. I mean, I'll ask you if you have any other observations about what's going on in your neighborhood.
Yesterday we kind of, like, right outside my office, we just watched the protests going on, and that was it. I mean, and I guess today is the day of nonviolent civil disobedience, but I haven't seen any of that going on. What's amazing is they keep on cleaning the streets. You can hear the street cleaners. But you have this guy that just keeps on going up and down the streets and cleaning them. I don't know why he's doing that. Sometimes I really think that the whole sanitation thing is a scam. Like, they don't need to clean the streets that often, and sometimes they don't clean the streets, but you're moving your car, like, all the time. It's such a pain in the ass, and they're not even cleaning the streets.
I don't know. I seem to always be in the path of one of those things, and then maybe the street is quote-unquote clean, but then I feel disgusting because you get, like, in the whirl of it.
It's amazing, though. I mean, it's amazing that it does suck up all that stuff. So, I mean, at least stuff in the south, but I'm amazed at the stuff that sucks up. I mean, even the train cleaner, you know, the one that runs along in the subway,
mm-hmm.
sucking up all the paper and stuff, I find that technology amazing.
Uh-huh.
How can they do that? And I wonder if they must suck up rats and stuff in there, too.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
There must be, like, all kinds of, like, little... It's probably not even... It's probably just, like, a little, like, wet... like, smudge or something, when they, like, I mean, I don't know, I guess they compact it in somewhere. I don't know, I guess they take that into account, animals.
I doubt it.
You don't think so? No, I'm saying, no, I'm not saying, like, on an animal rights perspective, on a pragmatic perspective of, like, what to do with animal waste. Because I'm sure there's, like, I mean, there is always a chance of disease.
Right.
you have to account for possible plagues.
Right.
No, so I don't have any more, I don't really have any more observations. I'm watching these guys direct traffic. That's it. I mean, there's nothing happening. They have the, there are two of these NYPD, SUVs, driving the, dragging horse carriages. Oh, and there are horses in the back. I love horses. I think horses are really beautiful animals. I've never been to horses, and then I think I saw one of those races, and I just thought the horses were incredible. But also, too, you know, you've heard about these scooters that the police are riding around in now, knocking down the protesting cyclists.
No. Tell me about the scooters.
I was thinking I should, like, maybe that's what my place is, to do civil disobedience with my bike.
Yeah.
I don't want to get arrested. I really don't.
Well, you should talk to Zinni and Misha, because they do interesting bike things that I actually think you would find very interesting.
Oh, really? Is it allowed to speak to?
Yeah, Zinnia, she's here. Hold on, I'm going to get the headset.
Okay. Oh, you have a headset?
Hi.
Oh, hi. Your name is Vivian? What is your name? I'm sorry.
Zinnia?
Vivian?
Zinnia.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to pronounce it again. The listeners will know.
Yeah, well, it's Zinnia. It starts with ZH.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hi,
how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. I'm just standing outside the Duane Reed.
Yeah.
So what are you going to tell me about these things? Is that why Erica gave you the headset? Or
We just thought it would be a good idea to drive around the city at night during the Republican convention, so we did it once so far, like, two nights ago. And it was fun. It was nice to see how, people, what is going on at night, it's like between, 2 and 4, I guess.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that must be so much fun.
Yeah, it's just the time when people are coming from the parties and some people are just starting to prepare for the next day, so it's, and it was the day,
I saw some people, but not that late at night, but I saw a whole group of cyclists riding through Williamsburg, and I don't know exactly what their deal was, but they were a whole group, and then they were holding up traffic, but I think kind of inadvertently.
Right.
But it's nice late at night. I used to drive a fish truck at that time.
Uh-huh.
You see all different kinds of people that you would never, ever see. It's a whole different world.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So where did you ride?
What do we ride?
Where did you ride?
We stopped by at the Union Square, then we went to the Madison Square Garden to see what's going on there. And I mean, it is easier to get around with the bike because some of the streets are the streets are closed for the cars, but you can get around by bike. And you're fast, and at the same time, you're almost like just person walking on the street. So,
That's all right. Like, it's nice about the bike, too, because it goes slow. Well, it depends how fast you are, I guess, but
yeah.
You can go slow enough that you can see things,
mm-hmm.
but then you cover enough territory that you can see a variety of things.
Right, yeah, it's different. It's a different way of seeing places.
Did you cross, where did you came from, Brooklyn?
Yeah.
And what bridge did you cross?
Brooklyn Bridge.
And you went over, was it nice going over that in the middle of the night?
Oh, yeah. And then we went to, on our way back, we hit Prospect Park. It was totally quiet, nobody there, just like very loud crickets. It was nice. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Really nice. Oh, someone should do like a short film about that. That sounds really nice.
Well, I think people are making all sorts of biking films. Actually, there was like a bikers film festival not that long ago, like 2 weekends ago or something.
Really?
Yeah, they were showing. I didn't go actually. It was going to rain and it seemed like it's going to be very bad and it was far away in Williamsburg, so we just. But yeah, there are a lot of things happening. The bike messengers are a very active group. They're organizing races and, like, the festivals and all sorts of things, so.
Yeah, I met these messengers one time in D.C., and they had, like, this whole code.
Right.
And, like, they would go for these huge rides on the weekends.
Yeah.
And then they would just like, they, and then during the week, they, you know, they would do the messenger job and then get high all the time and watch
right.
cartoons.
Yeah.
So that seemed like, sometimes I think that would be a nice life to adopt for like a week. Just getting high all the time, having a really cool bike, and then riding all around the city and just eating like different food.
Yeah.
And then just getting high again and riding around and then like,
right.
taking a nap in the park or something.
Yeah, yeah. No, they're virtuosos with the bikes. They do amazing things on the bikes, the messengers. They just throw it. I mean, it's like, if anybody could ride a bike, it's them. I mean, me compared to the, I shouldn't even, like, start comparing my driving to, like, bike driving to the messengers' bike driving. It's not.
Yeah. No, they are amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, I don't know how, I guess, I don't know what percentage of messengers get killed, but some of them get killed when they.
Yeah.
But you see them speeding, like, I've seen, like, on, like, I've seen messengers come down, like, Fifth Avenue, you know, it's kind of a hill right before 34th.
Uh-huh.
And the light is, you know, they have the red. And then, like, they go through, you know, it's like four lanes of traffic
yeah.
on 34th. And they're just, like, they don't, like, really slow down very much. And they just cruise right through there. It's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah, they're amazing.
I know, I'd always be, I don't go to those extremes.
No, I have like a folding bike. I can't even achieve, you know, high speed or like whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, folding bikes are cool. They can you fold them up and put them in a case and like fly somewhere with them?
Well, you can order. It's a Dehan, so you can order like a carrying sack for them or something or a backpack. And you can take them somewhere with you.
Well, that's good because, like, if you don't have a lot of storage space,
yeah,
like bikes are a pain to store.
Oh, yeah.
I have two bikes actually. One that I almost never ride. It's like it's a bike that I bought a long time ago, but I kept as like my backup bike.
Sure.
And my wife is always bugging me to sell it or get rid of it or something.
Mm.
But I want to keep it because it's my backup bike. But it takes up so much room.
Yeah, yeah, it does. You have to store them vertically in the, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but then that means you have to put, like, a hook in the wall or something.
Yes, yeah.
Like, I don't want to deal with that. And then I have to get far enough to, like, actually hold the bike. I don't know, I hate putting hooks in the wall because I'm always convinced that the hook is just going to fall out. You know?
Yeah.
Like, the big hooks, you know?
Right.
Or I'm going to, like, hit some wiring or gas pipes or something. You just don't know what's behind there.
Yeah, yeah. The walls in, I mean, I don't know, but walls in Brooklyn are horrible. The building materials are cheap and horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a friend one time who, he was like in his first days living in Paris. He didn't really know much French. And like, that's exactly what happened to them. They're hanging out something and then like, the gas just started cruising like completely just, like, I'm trying to think of the, why can't I think of the word? Spooting, but it was gas. It was like, it was air gas.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I guess there's no other kind of gas, but it was, yeah, it was like natural gas.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't even know what to do. It was just like, they didn't know who to call. It was just coming out. They were freaking out. So I guess they got to the concerts or something.
Wow.
To do something. But like, that's my biggest fear, like gas leak.
Yeah, definitely. You can, yeah. Yeah,
so
yeah.
When are you going to do the next one?
The next ride. I hope we got hooked up on night rides, so I hope we can, you know, well, you usually do it during the weekend because you don't have, you know, you have to go to work the next day. I mean, I don't, but Misha does, my husband. So yeah, we tried like on the weekend usually, maybe like next weekend we'll do it again.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and I hope it's not going to be as humid, because that's torture.
Yeah, no, it'll be nicer, though. I think it's going to get cool,
in
the next couple of days or something. Although, I kind of like it when it's humid, and you're sweating, and then you come home and take a shower, and then you can just turn on the cold water.
Right.
And you, like, stick it on your head until you're about to faint,
yes.
And then you step out of the shower.
Yeah, that's nice feeling, too. Right.
I love that.
Yeah, sure.
Hello? Sorry.
Did you say phone?
No, I just, there's something happened with the phone.
Oh, okay, maybe, I don't know. Do you hear me now?
Yeah, it's fine, it's just one of those, like, It seemed like one of those delay things or something. You know, it's weird. There are a lot of white-haired old men, like hanging out. And for the past couple of days, I think at least 5 times I've seen Norman Mailer. I keep on saying, was that Norman Mailer? Oh, no, it's just some guy, walking around the street. I'm really hoping to see Norman Mailer.
Okay. Well, maybe you'll see him one day.
I would love to see Norman Mailer. I swear to God, this could easily be Norman Mailer riding a bike with a basket on the front, but it's not.
I'm sorry, but I don't know who is Norman Mailer.
He's a writer.
Oh, okay.
He wrote, I guess his most famous book is, or two most famous books are The Executioner Song.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was called The Naked and the Dead. It was a book about World War II and fighting in the Pacific. And The Executioner Song was about Gary Gilmore, the guy who, I think he murdered some people in a gas station, and then he was eventually executed.
Right.
And I'm trying to think of whether they called it, he kind of invented this new form of writing. It was kind of like this fiction that was based on nonfiction, and
there
was always a big argument between him and Truman Capote, because Truman Capote wrote In Cold Blood, and they always had this argument on who invented the form or the new form.
Right.
I'm getting this right. I could easily be wrong on all of this or being inaccurate, but I guess that's the gist.
Uh-huh.
But I would love to see Norman Mailer. Actually, Norman Mailer's son is the editor of High Times magazine.
Oh, okay.
There's another tidbit for you.
Really?
Erica said that he doesn't hear you, right?
No.
Yeah, Erica is asked, is it really so? That sounds exciting.
What sounds exciting?
That his son is the editor of the High Times.
I know.
Yeah.
It's amazing that he used his privilege to gain that position.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, he could have easily, I don't know, published some crummy work of fiction.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, I guess he's kind of a political guy too. So
right.
I just heard a short interview with him, so that's all I know. I didn't know this before, a week or two ago.
Yeah, I read the same interview.
And I'll probably forget it in another 2 weeks. So it's a good thing I'm mentioning it now.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
But I should go.
Okay.
Because, I never know, my job, if I go, right now this is really turning into lunch, whereas before, when it goes a short time, it's kind of a break, and then I can take lunch.
Right.
But now it's been going on that it's lunch, because I want to have a cigarette, so then that's going to be, my lunch. Also, too, what if my boss, listens to these archives? I hope I'm not going to get in trouble for who are you? And the other thing is, I haven't been taking lunch either, so it doesn't matter. But Jerry, I read the story about people who start weblogs about their jobs.
Yeah.
And then they'll say all these terrible things about their coworkers and bosses and stuff, and they think that these people would never read weblogs.
Right.
And they invariably, someone always ends up reading it, and I've heard of people who've been fired because of weblogs.
Wow.
That's a job.
Oh, my God. Well, you can always do a keyword search, I guess, and you can find people's weblogs like that.
I thought I can't believe that anyone would find, if I had a weblog about financial aid office at FIT, I would find it amazing that someone would find it. In my work, I just can't, I don't know, I just... Maybe too, some of the people I work with are very religious, and they don't engage in any kind of pop cultural stuff.
Mm.
I met one woman who, she was born again sometime in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And, all her cultural knowledge stopped at, The Cure.
Uh-huh.
And she doesn't know she doesn't know anything else. She really doesn't know anything.
Wow.
She didn't even know who, I don't know. I'm not going to mention something. I don't know. Britney Spears or something. But she doesn't know anything. It's amazing. All she knows is Christianity now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not going to comment on that.
Yeah. Do you want to talk to me about Jesus? And how Jesus can empower your life?
Well, me? My life?
I'm also born again. Didn't I have to tell you that?
I have a very weird relationship to with Jesus or anything connected to his existence or life. There are a few very interesting theories about Jesus, and I'm I like some of them, but most of them I really don't like. I just think the whole philosophy just got screwed up one time along the line somewhere. Just something happened and it got bad.
Yeah, I think it got screwed up when it became too literal.
Yeah, or whatever. Or maybe just somebody just created a whole new idea and just... That's what people believe to be the original one. I don't know. Yeah, somebody just replaced the original story with whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's tough, too, because you really can't argue with faith.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you can't. It's, yeah.
So, that's the problem. But whatever. I mean, the Christians, they have good fun, and they get out there and do stuff. So they do. I mean, this woman is really active. She does everything. She, like, volunteers in prisons and goes out proselytizing all the time. And she hooks up with, like, Christians in Europe. And
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And
so, I mean, I think she has a very fulfilling life, even though, like, I wouldn't, like, want that kind of fulfilling life. But I think she does have a very fulfilling life.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, the network is great. The Christian network. I mean, it's not great. It's grand. It's like it's big. So
maybe that's what I need to do to publish a novel. I could get it published. You know, like, do you ever hear of the Left Behind series?
No.
The Left Behind series is like it's a series of books, and then they also made videos of the books. Mm. And it's basically about the apocalypse and the second coming of Christ and. What it is, it's about people who have not been born again or left behind.
Right. You're fading, by the way.
Oh, sorry. I'll put it back. It is there.
Okay, cool. It's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, so they're left behind. So these books are all like, so I read the beginning of the book of one just to see what it was like. And basically, like, there's this pilot, and he's, like, having this affair with this flight attendant.
Mm-hmm.
And what ends up happening is all these people start disappearing from their flight.
Uh-huh.
And then they're, like, radioing down to the ground, and they find out, like, all these people are disappearing from Chicago, all over the place.
Wow.
And all these people are, like, I guess they're going to heaven, I guess, right? And all the people, all other people are left behind.
Right.
And it's amazing. It seems like such a simple concept. And they made, like, I don't know, like, 8 volumes of books. And this is, like, the best-selling book. Like, all these people in my office are reading it. People get the videotapes. I would actually like to see the videotapes. I think they'd be pretty entertaining. But, I mean, it's amazing. Like, that whole industry out there is incredible.
Yeah.
And people love these books, and they totally believe it.
Right, yeah. Of course.
I know, so I work with someone who graduated from Hunter College, and she's, like, a total believer.
Wow.
Like I just can't even believe she graduated. It's like she went to school to become a mystic or something.
Well, yeah, that would be fun. Harry Potter school or something.
I just say, like, I can understand, you know, if you study theology or something, but, like, she, like, total superstition.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, I joke all the time about getting hit by a car on my bike. I say, oh, hopefully I won't get killed on the way home. And, like, she, like, can't deal with that. She thinks that if I say it, it's going to happen.
Wow.
Hello?
I'm listening. I don't know.
I can't hear because it's windy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know why people, especially like now, I don't know why people would turn to Christianity rather than to anything else. I would be surprised to actually see a statistics where people turn more to Christianity than to anything else.
Well, maybe, you know, the thing is, too, part of it is just, like, carrying around the books, like, you know, Christianity is, like, pretty portable. You know,
yeah.
It comes in one volume. Like, if you choose philosophy, then, you know, it's, like, that's harder to carry around.
Yeah.
You know, especially during the apocalypse.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. But I don't know, still, I would think that, you know, it's, like, people who are... I don't know. I would be surprised. I would think people would turn to Buddhism or whatever, but not to Christianity. But I don't know. I guess Christianity is the comfortable way out or whatever. I don't know. If
I also think, like, you know, like I don't understand when people who are raised Christian go to, like, Buddhism. It's like, because I think you can find good things. I think you can find things in Christianity that if you're, like, looking for kind of, like, a personalized spirituality or something,
mm-hmm.
I think you can find good things in Christianity. I mean, for me, like, I love the Bible because they're great stories. You know, to me, it's like
yeah.
a collection of, like, stories and, you know, myths and, like, a little bit of history, or just based on some history.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't understand, like, going to, like, I know, like, I guess I just don't understand ever turning to a religion as an adult if the tradition hasn't meant something to you, like if you weren't raised with it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I can understand, you know, if you were a Christian, like, being brought up, and it's an important tradition, and you've gone to church, and you've, I don't know, you get something from prayer, and you believe in it, and you've, I mean, I guess you were kind of brainwashed to believe or whatever, and then you maybe, I don't know, you've come to your own understanding of religion. I can understand that. But, I don't know, I don't understand, like, I guess I don't understand being born again and then wholeheartedly embracing it.
Oh, yeah, being, I don't know, to me it feels like something's wrong when you're being born again. It's like, all of a sudden, it's like, it has to be, well, I don't know. Yeah,
I'm
it just...
convinced that, like, the person, like, I'm totally convinced that the people who were born again, like, there was something about in their lives that they had so little control over,
uh-huh.
and they couldn't deal with not having control, that they turned to religion.
Oh my God, that's like, that's actually, to me it feels like the worst reason to turn to religion is, like, trying to have control over, because, I don't know, like, to me, religion, well, I don't know, spirituality associates with, actually, like, releasing that control over your life and kind of giving it over to, just giving it up, and, you know, not being able to control your life is what seems to be interesting. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I guess, too, like, I guess if you kind of live a life in a certain amount of comfort level or security, you can, like, kind of say, okay, I'm going to give up control over my life and let things as they come. And then maybe if you don't have that same security, you would turn to, I don't know, you'd be more likely to turn to religion.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know, maybe if you live like in a violent situation or something, you'd be more, or something like that, where you feel you need to have, like, an escape, then maybe that you would turn to religion. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, King James Bible is great. It's a great book. But, it's not a great book to believe literally.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I just don't understand how people can believe, like, in the parting of the Red Sea or like, Jesus' miracles. Like, I just can't see how you can believe that literally. I'm, like, totally amazed.
Well, I mean, I don't know. There's all sorts of interpretations that people would offer you. There are all sorts of, like, scientific kind of facts that kind of lead to proof, maybe, of, like, the parting of the Red Sea. I don't know. I personally, like, I don't think it's a point. I don't think there's a point particularly that the Red Sea was parted or not. It's just, like,
no, people believe it parted.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, people want to believe in magic. And I can understand that, you know, it's nice to believe, but it's like, there's something about, like, believing literally like that, something wrong about it. It's like, yeah, you can't really, you know, you have to, I don't know, I was brought up to be, to be questioning things, so, you know, I think you should be, like, people should be questioning everything, and then, like, you know, if they can't avoid some proof, then they can believe it, I guess, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it's not gonna, like, I guess it's not efficient if you're always questioning, you know, the sermon isn't, I guess, good that way. But, I mean, I guess there's some, like, I don't know, every time I go to church, I'm disappointed, you know. So, like, I'm going to go to my sister, she's christening her child,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to go. And I'm always like, oh, maybe this will be good. And then it's so bad, it's so dumbed down
yeah.
that I can't even deal with it. So I end up just reading the Bible while I've been, you know, throughout the service, I try to...
Right.
Then, but the thing is, it takes so long for some of these stories in the Bible to really get going. It's like, by the end of the service, I'm just, like, just getting started.
Mm.
So, it's kind of tough. But, you know, another thing, another thing I didn't even know, like, I didn't really think that people believe, like, I found out, like, a few months ago that people actually believe that, like, Adam and Eve were, like they were fully formed.
Like, that's how man started.
Yeah.
With Adam and Eve, like, fully formed human beings. Like, they think, like, science is totally false. Like, I just can't believe that. Like, I always thought, oh, well, they believe that, like, Adam and Eve evolved.
Hmm.
But they, like, I think they believe that just Adam and Eve were, like, there.
Right.
Like, it was just them.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
I need to call the party.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to give, this is very interesting. I'm going
to
give.
No, you have to talk more. I'm not going to let you get off the phone. Oh, listen, can I just talk to you a little bit about Jesus?
Okay, sure.
No, I'm kidding. I just want to tell you what Jesus did for my life and how he changed my life and how he could change yours.
Okay.
Okay, you're going to put Erica back on the phone or I just going
to go? I'm going to give Erica the headset so she can talk to you.
Okay, all right. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, nice talking to you. I hope I'll see you one day.
Okay.
All right. Bye. Bye. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Hey, Wade.
Hi, Erica.
Hi. So I got to listen to that whole thing, too.
What?
I got to listen to you, too. I just couldn't talk to you. It was great.
Oh, are you listening?
Yes.
Is it on a delay?
No. I have just another headset, but not a talk thing. Anyway, thank you. What I'm trying to say is thank you.
All right. Yeah, well, thanks for letting me babble on. You know, I'm going to become completely self-conscious. I don't even know if I'm ever going to be able to listen to these archives. I'm going to look at them. I'll just look at that link, and I'll just be sitting there. Should I click? Shouldn't I? You know?
But, you know, you'll listen to yours, and then you'll listen to everything around it also, and, you know, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
You'll find you're in good company.
Well, part of the reason I do this is because this is, like, my, embrace, like, Wade. It's okay to be Wade.
Uh-huh.
Exercise.
Uh-huh.
So this is the most, like, I mean, the wonderful thing about, you know, if you just talk to someone, it, like, basically people forget it. Like, if you say something stupid at a party or wherever, people generally forget it. But this is, like, forever. It's going to be there forever.
Unless I wipe out my hard drive or something like that, so.
Hopefully that won't happen. I have some work out there on the internet that I wish would be wiped out, but it's still out there. So I guess that was, like, the beginning of it. So.
Those photographs of you in the bathroom stall?
Yeah, exactly. Just sitting there, like, I, like, naked, trying to sniff out a little bit of scent for my boss, like, just, like, to get me going.
All right, Wade, I'm sorry if we've made you miss your lunch.
No, that's all right. I already ate it, but it's
okay.
But, you know, it's okay. It's fine.
Okay.
So, you know, actually, you should be apologizing to all the students who ate that didn't process during this time.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. You can redirect them to the radio.
I know, I will. I'm going to have to listen to the archives before I start directing anyone to this thing.
All right.
Okay, see you.
All right, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, bye.
Bye, be well.
All right, that was Wade Nasanovich. He's a Brooklyn-based writer, thinker, speaker. And that was decadent. We got to spend almost an hour with him today. So, he's unbelievable, I think, with the way he can, like, link up connections immediately. I guess it's part of being a writer and a word person.
Definitely.
Yeah. So next we're going to call Barbara Weisberger, and she is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She has a piece in the Watch What We Say exhibition.
Hello?
Hey, Barbara. It's Erica.
Hi.
You're on the radio.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, pretty good.
Good.
Are you having to readjust time zone-wise from Montana, or is it the same time zone?
Oh, no. It's three time zones.
It's so you're...
We're 2 hours earlier, but we have to go through three time zones. So, yes, it is strange.
Yeah. Well, just time and and visuals, I'm sure.
What's that?
And the visuals, too.
Yes, the visuals are radically different.
Yeah.
A lot more people. It's a little hard to readjust.
Can you describe where you were?
Well, I was in a little town of 200 people at the Montana Artist Refuge between, and it's about 40 miles from Helena, which is the state capital, and about 40 miles from Butte, which is a really interesting old mining city that both is the most toxic Superfund site in the country. I might be wrong about that.
Barbara, you sound really low to
me.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Oh. How about now?
Yeah, a little better.
Oh.
Okay.
I could switch phones.
How does it sound through that?
How does it work? The phone's hooked up to,
The phone's going through an amp into the computer.
Uh-huh.
Well,
wait, let me...
Okay.
This is a more expensive phone.
Okay, great. Alright. It sounds...
Yeah?
Yeah, it sounds maybe a little better. So, okay, it's a mining town, Butte.
Oh, yeah, we were on Butte. Butte is a mining town, that's very... pretty fascinating, and also, as I was saying, there's something there called the Berkeley Pit, which is a pool, like a tailing pond, and it's a big a waste site. So, which would be an interesting segue to talk about. Watch what we say.
And how long were you there?
I was doing a 3-month residency.
Uh-huh.
And it's pretty amazing. It's incredibly beautiful there. We're sort of right in the middle of a lot of mountains, and the sense of scale is completely different from the East Coast. And actually, it's in many ways very different from the East Coast.
Ah, yeah.
But there aren't a lot of people, and there's a lot of space.
And how do you feel like, I mean, you've been going there for a few years now, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel like that landscape or, you know, how do you feel like it's affected your work? Or, I mean, is it something you can...
Well, I don't feel like there's a direct... I don't feel like, you know, people ask that a lot out there. I think that, you know, people want to hear about how... It's a pretty special place, and I think people really want to hear about, you know, what effect it's having on you.
Right.
But for me, I don't think it's really anything too specific or direct, but it's kind of an amazing place to work because it's so spacious, and there's just, like, this vastness to the landscape that I feel like you can really, I feel like you can really clear your head and kind of really focus and concentrate on things out there. But it's sort of hard to put my finger on because I don't think it's any kind of literal, I don't think it has any kind of literal effect.
Well, that said, I kind of feel like this piece that's in the show, and I'm going to ask you to describe it in just a second.
Okay.
I feel like... this piece, and I was just pulling up on the website, I was going to pull your piece up on your work up on the website, but I feel like it has more vastness in it, and I don't know if that's just me projecting, but anyway, can you describe the piece a little bit?
There is a lot of space in my drawings, that's true. I think that might predate Montana.
Uh-huh.
So maybe I just have an affinity for that. It's like the antidote to the city or something. But the drawing in the show is it's part of a series of drawings, a long ongoing series, and they mostly feature these kind of blobby figures that are sort of just barely articulated, in terms of the figurative elements. And this one has a sort of a figure in the center that's mostly a drip of kind of pinkish fleshy gouache, and it's the only articulation of the form that's figurative is the there's one arm with a hand that's kind of pulling up the top of this blobby figure as if sort of pulling up the top of flesh off the top of the head, and then the bottom of the form is sort of dripping and being pulled down towards off the bottom edge of the drawing. And it's all the other feature that it has is an open mouth. It's kind of baring its teeth. And it's very, in most of the drawings, the figures are very central, so they're sort of, I think it's going to sort of on display or before the camera, which in this one, there's also the figures framed with, I have it up as well on my computer, with seven surveillance cameras. And in a lot of the drawings, I've been using the image of a sort of cartoonish drawing of a surveillance camera so that the figures that are in the drawings are sort of doubly on display. I think the camera is kind of a viewer within the context of the drawing, so that the figures are sort of on view within the context of the frame of the drawing and on view in terms of the viewer. And as you said, there's a lot of space in the drawing. That's pretty much the imagery that's in the drawing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So, what's the title of the piece?
No, the piece is not titled. Its title is number 760, and all of the drawings are numbered. And I started that a couple of years ago. I wanted to make this body of work that would be a very long, ongoing, unfolding, not linear, but narrative body of drawing. So that narrative in the sense that there are these recurring characters and themes, one of them being the surveillance. So all the drawings are numbered, which one of the things I like about that is sort of getting this, I get this sense of kind of a, like an arch, sort of the arch of the evolution of the imagery and the drawing. So, and then I also get to just keep counting and the numbers just get higher and higher.
Yeah, no, there's definitely something.
I can't wait till I hit 1,000.
Yeah. There's something just a little bit staggering, like, to think about that in relation to the ideas of surveillance and, like, like, the perpetuation of these, like, horrible creatures, too, like, the numbers of them, like, in relation to that. That's interesting.
Well, there are a lot of repeats, the characters, sort of. Actually, there's something sort of cyclical about the drawings, like, characters sort of come in and out of the sequence. So, which is another thing I like about numbering them, because it sort of imposes this, you know, linear structure to the whole thing. But then there's almost like a spiral, I think, of the imagery, the way it sort of comes in and out of the body, the whole body of them. So
can you talk a little bit about, like, and your choices of, like, your palette is very particular, and and also the application of the materials, and, like, it seems very deliberate. I mean, because they're I guess almost sort of minimal in a way, but can you talk about those choices also?
I will try to.
Okay.
They sort of started out with a lot more specific reference to a lot of different underground comic styles. So initially I wasn't using color. They were all black ink, black and white. And they were, I think, a little bit more graphic looking. But I started, I started to want to use the ink in a sort of maybe a little bit more painterly style. There's a lot of wash. There are a lot now, a lot of washes, and they're very drippy. There's a very watery quality to the media at this point. And I started using the color very much like almost like spot color. And like you say, it's a very narrow palette. It's all gouache, and I just started using colors that related in almost in a kind of emblematic and maybe almost cliche way to the body, like a kind of out of the tube flesh tone, and then colors, sort of earthy colors that sometimes suggest blood or just somehow suggest the body. I use a pretty strong red for the mouth. But the palette sort of evolved because of this interest in the body in the drawing. And, you know, I describe the figures as blobby, so kind of an interest in the body, the form of the body somehow breaking down. So the palette came out of the content of the drawings, and it pretty much continues to be this very, you know, body-related palette, or sort of beyond that, at least a kind of earthy palette, I guess would be one way to describe it. If that answers that question.
Yeah. And I'm just looking through, like, the more recent works on paper, it seems like there's a little less comedy in these. Do you feel that way? Or, I mean, they're still... They obviously reference comics, like you were saying, and,
mm-hmm.
but somehow...
Well, I don't know. I mean, I hope they still are comic. I'm still thinking of them that way. I mean, I you know, for a long time, I would sort of describe them as somewhere between humor and horror. And I am interested in kind of straddling that line, or that feeling of, you know, like, something that you laugh at, you know, like a pratfall or something that you laugh at and then you feel kind of icky about laughing at it, or something that, you know, is kind of funny and creepy at the same time. So I am still interested in having that be a pretty big part of the drawings.
Yeah. I guess I'm just purely commenting. Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if it's just because of where I feel like I'm in right now and looking at them, they are more about the horror for me right now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and definitely the comedy is still there. That's an interesting thing to think about, like, coming to it at different points, you know?
I do see what you're saying, and my feelings about it do change as, you know, sort of this context shifts.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think... the surveillance came out of actually some time ago. I had a lot of images of TVs in the drawings, which were really just kind of a joke. I was sort of using the TV frame
mm-hmm.
as a frame within the frame to, you know, sort of frame the action of what the drawing was. And that sort of led to the surveillance cameras. I mean, I was certainly thinking about how pervasive surveillance is and wanted to bring, you know, that element of contemporary life into the work, but I guess that's that would be an example of something that that maybe changes a little because of, you know, the amount of surveillance that's
right.
in our lives now,
yeah.
and, you know, how that's sort of tied up with 9/11 or tied up with everything that's going on. So, yeah,
absolutely,
yeah.
Can you talk about also, like, moving off the paper and onto the wall and...
In the wall drawing?
Yeah.
I've been doing these large-scale wall drawings, first with gouache, and recently I've been mixing very washy gouache drawings with some elements that I've been doing in the computer that are sort of poppy, very graphic, hard-edged drawing forms that I have produced as vinyl. So there's these cut vinyl elements that are very sharp-edged, mixed in with sort of washy gouache drawing. And it's the same imagery that I've been working with, and I see them as part of, still as part of this ongoing narrative that I'm cooking up. And I think I wanted to be working on a larger scale to have the drawing be in the space with you and sort of putting them on the wall, just sort of like breaking out of the frame of the paper and having them sort of more in physical space with the viewer so that the narrative really starts to surround you, which I think can happen. I like to show the drawings as a group usually, so I think that starts to happen with that. A lot of people said they almost start to feel like cells of a comic strip when they're that way. So the wall drawing sort of acts that way as well. And also just there's sort of a longer sense of time, I think, you know, in a larger scale work. And a way to sort of have the drawing relate to the architecture of whatever the space is. But there's still, I still see it as part of the same body of work, essentially.
Mm-hmm. It does animate them in the way that you're talking about for me, and also it makes me think of, I mean, there's something so sort of childlike about, I guess it's...
Drawing on the wall.
Well, drawing it on the wall, and then also the figures somehow, it reminds me just of looking at things on the wall, and they change into sort of monstrous figures, like looking at wood grain pattern or wallpaper pattern and that sort of thing. And it just seems, it seems like they belong, like this in and out.
Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking about that the other day, and I was thinking about drawing on the wall. I thought, oh, this is sort of like kids acting out.
Yeah, but then when it's art, it's like, suddenly it's this precious thing, and it's temporary. And
There's that aspect.
Instead of the acting out.
Yeah. No, then you have to let it go and let it get painted over.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an interesting thing, too. To do something really large that is pretty temporal.
So is there anything that you've been, and since you're outside of New York right now, is there anything that you've heard in your travels or seen in your travels, because you've traveled pretty much through the heartland, is there anything that you feel like is that you'd like to mention about, I mean, outside of your work, I guess.
About,
I guess, the upcoming elections and the convention in New York and just sort of the general political climate.
Well, yeah, very anecdotal. It's hard, I mean, in terms of going to the heartland, I certainly was pretty alert, you know, just to bumper stickers and people had signs up. It was sort of a mad dash 4-day drive.
Yeah.
So I certainly didn't get any kind of in-depth impression. But it did seem to me that there was kind of a lack of bumper stickers one way or the other, as far as I could see. It seemed to me that I saw more Bush Cheney out there.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's a little strange to me being outside of New York is that there is a kind of funny disconnect and a kind of quiet, I think. I mean, obviously there's a lot on the news about protests and what's going on in New York, but it does feel oddly distant. I mean, I'm in Pittsburgh, which isn't that far.
Mm-hmm.
I did see some signs up the other day here, you know, about the protests in the city, and that felt good. I think this town is pretty engaged, actually, but, I think people are pretty involved, but it is, I get pictures from people of what's going on in New York.
Uh-huh.
I'm very grateful for the dispatches. But I get the sense, you know, there isn't that feeling of you know, how pressing it must be in New York and how present it must be. Sort of feels more like life as usual and, you know, not quite as imminent somehow or something. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's great to hear you talk about your work and especially just like that you've come in fresh from your residency, so it must feel really in the front.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. Well, one thing, I mean, Montana's a very interesting place in terms of what's going on because just the issues are so different. You know, the issues that they're, like, logging and forestry is a really big issue, and there's a lot of environmental awareness out there, and I think a lot of, you know, fairly independent thinking, and I mean, they're kind of, I think, people of all stripes, but it's been pretty interesting sort of hearing a lot, you know, being in a place where environmental issues, you know, are, and certainly like the forestry issues,
right,
are a lot closer to home than, you know, the way they would be for us in New York or something. So that's been kind of cool.
I think that's really interesting. I mean, we kind of forget because we're all within our own small bubbles of what is important and what feels urgent and how do those things intersect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Barbara, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you, Erica.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I look forward to seeing you here soon.
Ditto.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Hello to Eric.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Barbara Weisberger in Pittsburgh. And she's talking about her work in the Watch What We Say exhibition and just in general.
I don't hear you.
You don't hear me?
Mm-mm.
I see me on the monitor here. You don't hear me at all?
Yes.
Hello? Okay, let's just try turning this one up. Hello, hello, hello. Yeah, I'm in here, but you don't hear it.
I hear you now.
You hear me now. Okay. So, I think we're going to end here today. Shavit, maybe we'll get a chance to talk tomorrow. And Mary, I'm going to take this call because maybe it is.
Hello, you're on the radio.
Hi, it's Mark.
Hi, Mark.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I was listening to your show, and I'm going to let you know your website's back up.
Oh, that's great. And the listen button is working now?
The listen button is working. Yeah, I'm hearing myself in delay. The listen button takes you to the list. I mean, I'm on an old computer, so it doesn't open directly into my browser, so I can't tell you if the listening thing is working or not.
Oh, well, that's great. Good news.
Sounds good.
Excellent.
Your levels are good.
Excellent. Thank you. How's it going at the gallery?
It's a little slow, but somebody called and said they're on their way in from Manhattan on the Canarsie line.
Okay.
So, should be pretty good.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much for the call. Anything you want to say at the end, in closing, the national anthem, anything like that?
Okay.
All right. All right. Thanks. Bye.
All right. So, thanks for listening, and that ends today, Tuesday, August 31st. Tomorrow, join me again. We'll be talking to Maki in Tokyo. Wade again about his commute. Carrie Moyer in the gallery in person, talking about her work, then Ricardo Dominguez via telephone, talking about his work, and then join us Thursday for Xenia and Misha's broadcast in Russian and English. All right, all the best. Bye. That's the wrong button.
Yeah.